Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The man, Brian Koberger's defense is counting to prove that he wasn't at the scene of the Idaho student murders. He's a retired cop whose phone mapping analysis has faced scrutiny in previous cases where a Colorado judge raised concerns about its reliability. The individual, Cy Ray, is a key part of the alibi that suggests Koberger was driving in rural Washington and Idaho, not brutally murdering four students in their home. So let's break this down. Before we talk about what he's claiming in the Koberger case, we need to talk about the concerns that have been raised about the prior work of his. And this is in no way trying to say that he's not good at his job or that he doesn't have credentials. He does. He certainly does. But some of those things have been questioned by a judge in court before. So we're going to talk about just some of those facts. This is very likely a good guy trying to do what he believes in with the technology that he also believes in. But what needs to be done, as a judge had ruled in a previous case, there needs to be a little more insight and openness about how this technology works, about the oversight of it, its credibility and the accountability that it faces in scrutiny. So let's look into that just a little bit in these concerns about his prior work, because it's not subtle. It's not a matter of interpretation. It's a court document, a black and white document where a judge lays out in no uncertain terms that Cy Ray's analysis in a previous case, a tool that he developed, couldn't be presented to a jury. Not because the jury wouldn't understand it, but because the foundation of it is what the judge was questioning. It was in 2023 that Ray was brought in to testify in a Colorado criminal case. The same sort of thing, somewhat. Location data, cell tower mapping, a question of where someone was during a crime. Important parts to a case. And that is Ray's area of expertise. His software called Trax was supposed to visualize this data in a compelling way. And that's great. Juries, people in general, like to see things mapped out. It's far more compelling to see how things look on a map with specific points versus just a sheet of numbers and different points of where something may or may not be. Cell tower hits, triangulation, pings, turned into a clean, easy-to-read map. Could be a great thing for juries. Be a great thing for anyone just trying to do research and understand the location of someone and where they were and when. It looks sharp, slick, even the kind of tool you could imagine swaying a jury if you didn't dig too deep. But as one should, the judge did dig deep. And what he found, and this is the judge's opinion, wasn't just a few technical hiccups. It was concerns about its scientific grounding. There was no known error rate for the software, kind of important in something like this. No published methodology, and no peer reviews. It was, to borrow a court's phrase, visually compelling, and it was. But beneath the surface, kind of a liability. The kind that, if presented to a jury, might look like hard science, but was actually something that needed maybe a bit of work. If a judge is saying that it can't be admitted into court, and with those factors that the judge had talked about there, that's understandable. Did it meet the standards for expert testimony? That's why judges vet expert witnesses. And look, one judge could say that this is fine to use. Another could have a completely different opinion, but that is the opinion of one judge of the software that he was using at that time. Now, it's important to note here, we don't know for sure, at least as of this moment, if that same software is what he would want to use in this case. There's been a lot of things we've been told that says it's not. So take that into account. I don't know what he plans on using, but you have to understand that this was the technology that was attempted in that case to be introduced into a court of law to determine where someone was, determine eventually if they're going to be free or not. It's kind of a big deal. Cyray himself, he's someone who takes a stand as an expert witness. The credibility is important. It's not just about what they say, it's who they are, how they know what they know, and how transparently they can show their work. But according to the court, Ray's description of his qualifications in that case was also a bit of a point of contention, according to the court. And what might be described as a significant difference in how Ray characterized his credentials, Ray told the court he was more of an engineer than an engineer. That's a quote. The problem is, he's not an engineer, not by degree, not by license, not even by broad definition. In fact, his academic background doesn't include any direct related things with engineering. The court noted this difference, particularly in the context of expert testimony. And just like that, the individual presenting the analysis faced questions about his expertise. Again, this is what judges do. They are there to make sure the experts that one brings in are truly experts in the specific area they're being brought into. It is not unheard of for a judge to go, this person has expertise, but it's not strong enough in the area that they're trying to present the information for this case in. That is very common and normal. Because sometimes when you're backed into a corner, some experts just ain't going to help you. And there may be some that go, you know what? I think those ones are wrong. I think what I have is more accurate and better. And people are free to do that. People are free to say that. A judge at the end of the day is the one who has to decide if what they're saying is credible. If it could be an alternative way of looking at the data. So the court ended up in that case excluding the evidence. Full stop. It is noteworthy in this case. Experts don't usually get their evidence barred unless there are substantial concerns about the methodology. And as we outlined earlier, the judge had some concerns. But Ray's software and testimony didn't just raise questions. They raised significant scrutiny in that case. So why does all of this matter here in the Koberger case? Because this is the same individual that is now positioned as the defense's primary expert witness. The person they're relying on to convince a jury that Brian Koberger never went near the crime scene the night of the murders. That his phone never pinged a tower on the route towards the victim's home. That he was allegedly out driving under the stars, according to Ann Taylor, on a very foggy, cloudy night where you can't see the stars. And some sort of midnight soul search where four people were stabbed to death just miles away. He just happened to be somewhat in the area. And Cy is the guy that the Koberger folks are saying, prove it. Prove to them that what we're telling you is true, that he was not close to this crime scene. Because over here, there's a lot of evidence that's saying he was. We need something solid that says he wasn't. They're not saying to make something up. They're looking for somebody that can have some sort of factual data that can be presented that may disagree with some of the other pieces of evidence, or at the very least, or very best, depending how you look at it, provide reasonable doubt. Because that is the bar. Reasonable doubt. Is there a level of reasonable doubt in this case that Brian Koberger might not be the person? That maybe there's a piece of data out there that shows or proves that he couldn't have been the person. That's what they're trying to get Ray to produce. And he, being on this case as of right now, judge still has to decide as of this recording if he'll let this evidence in. He believes he, as far as we can tell, has the data, has the facts to do just that. Does he? Not saying he doesn't. That's for a court to eventually decide. To be fair, Ray hasn't said he's using Tracks in this case, the software that he used in that other one that the judge said, don't think so. Could be something completely different. We just do not know at this time. But again, context, history, credentials, all that important. It's part of the resume. The defense may argue that whatever issues existed in Colorado don't apply here. And they might not. Maybe he's sticking to raw data. Maybe he's changed his methods. But here's the problem. His testimony still hinges on some kind of analysis of the data. Same type of data that his software was built to perform that the judge said, we're not going to admit this. So the judge says in one case, we don't think this is admissible. He may disagree. He may have the opinion that, look, maybe you don't understand this judge correctly, and I do. Maybe I don't have the peer reviews. Maybe I don't have this. Maybe I don't have that. But the data is solid, and that can be the case. No, that's, again, up for the judges to decide. You don't separate the man from his methods just because you don't say the software name out loud. But there's trial and error, you know, as you develop things, as you learn things, you know, you want to make sure they're ready to go to market before they actually do. Sometimes you get a wake up call once you get to market, as seemingly happened there in Colorado with the judge saying, not ready for prime time yet. Not to say the technology couldn't have improved or that he doesn't have a different way of going about this. So there's a core issue that is remaining here. The maps, how he interprets the cellular data, how he turns it into movement patterns and locations. And the moment he puts that in front of a jury, it carries weight. Until, of course, someone reminds the court that a judge previously raised concerns about the reliability of the underlying methodology, which, again, that may or may not be admitted into court. That could very easily be something where the judge says, nope, that has nothing to do with this case. It's not even the same software. Who knows? There's ways where that would not necessarily be admitted, but it's something that is dangling out there. And if you're in the Brian Koberger camp, you really need something solid at this point. You can't go out there on a whim. You can't go out there on an if. You can't go out there, even if you have somebody that you believe and they believe has data that shows something different than what others are interpreting. If that's going to get holes punched through it and the jury is going to look at that as unreliable, you probably just should not present it at all. Unless you have no other options, then it's kind of a Hail Mary. But time will tell once we get into the case and once we get into court to see just how much evidence each side truly has on the other. Right now, a lot of it's stacking up against Koberger. Ray has already testified once in May of 2024 in a pretrial hearing, not about tracks, but about the data, or more specifically, the missing data, according to him. 2 to 3% of the cell phone records, he says, in the case, weren't turned over by the prosecution. That may not sound like much, but he did emphasize that the gaps appeared in some of the most critical areas. Places where, if the data existed, it might show Koberger's phone moving towards or away from the crime scene, according to him. And that's important. But so is the framing. Because what Ray is essentially arguing is that what's missing is more valuable than what's there. Okay? But keep in mind, Ray is not here to argue the whole case. He's just there to argue the cell data itself. That's it. He's not there to prove anything else. This is his area, according to him, and that's what he is providing to the court, according to his analysis. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can disagree with what the opposite side is claiming, but you have to back up your work. The absence of certain records does benefit the defense, of course, but it also leads to interpretation and hangs on that. It leans on it heavily. The very thing a judge questioned in the earlier ruling. In that Colorado case, the court noted that Ray's analysis involved assumptions, not just technical gaps, but logical leaps, like inferring direction of travel or specific location without solid backup, according to the judge. That kind of interpretation gets even riskier when you're basing it on incomplete data, like in the Koberger case. So, you're following along, an individual whose analysis faced scrutiny is now, by a lot of consensus, the centerpiece of the defense. That depends entirely on his ability to read, interpret, and argue the meaning of phone records that may or may not be complete. To help Koberger, he would be a witness for them. That's the current landscape. It's not a minor detail. It is a foundation shaker. And let's be clear. Koberger, he deserves a defense without a doubt. The prosecution and the presumption of innocence isn't just a formality. It is the law. And reasonable doubt is the standard. But when a defense hinges on expert analysis that analysts needs to be sound, Cy Ray's track record there, or at least that mark from that one judge, it will raise questions about the reliability of the methods employed. But again, we have to understand that we do not know what is he using. He could have taken that away, I don't know, and said, okay, yeah, some flaws here. Let's button this up. Let's make this better. Let's do something completely different. We don't know the answer to that question. But I do believe he's coming into this on the right foot, believing that his methods are more accurate. There's no other reason why you would do that. It's just, does it stand up against everything else? And that's where this really hits, because the cell phone data, when used properly, can be powerful. It can place someone at the scene or away from it with a high degree of confidence. But when the person doing the placing has a history of analysis that has been questioned, that's, again, not evidence that if you're the defendant, want to put out there. And in this case, it's a situation with high stakes. They don't leave room for untested maps or theories built on missing information. The jury's going to have to weigh that carefully because a person's life is in the balance here. What comes up next in this whole story is the other side of the coin, because while Ray might be the individual leading the defense's digital charge, it wasn't always this way. This isn't some career-long advocate for the accused. Most of his career, Cy Ray was on the other side, helping prosecutors lock up people using different technology. That transition tells its own story. And it's where we go next, because Cy Ray says Brian Koberger's phone never took the Moscow-Pullman highway the night four University of Idaho students were killed. Not once. That's the core of the analysis. It's not hedging. His interpretation of the phone records is simple. This is how I would interpret it. Koberger didn't drive east from Pullman towards Moscow that night. That's what he's saying his data is saying, basically. He didn't head down that road, that key stretch of road that connects his apartment to the crime scene. He was, according to Ray, off somewhere else entirely. And if that's true, it's a powerful alibi. But here's the problem. It doesn't just tweak the state's timeline, it challenged the whole thing, because literally every other data point in this case says something different, something louder, something far more direct, and if we're being honest, something far harder to ignore. Let's start with the surveillance footage. And I know here's where a lot of people break off, and this is where you need critical thinking, able to look at both sides of the coin. You can't just dismiss the other side as, this is all unreliable. Everything's being planted. There's not a lot of evidence of that in this case. I'm sorry. If you want to look at a case that has a lot of issues with corruption, go look at Delphi. Go look at Sandra Birchmore. Potentially go look at Karen Reed. I don't see it here. I just don't. So, there's a lot of data. A lot of other places, a lot of moving parts that don't necessarily relate to one another other than Brian Koberger. So if you're going to go down the conspiracy route, that's, again, a lot of people in a lot of different places that don't know each other, all conspiring to frame Brian Koberger, of all people. How that logic adds up in anyone's mind, I don't know. I would love to hear it in the comments if you got some logic about it, and you can express yourself in a way that's not simply, this is all a lie, look at this bombshell. That's not evidence saying, bombshell, and look at this lie. Evidence is presenting your opinion in a clear and concise way, and we can talk about it. So I do want to hear it if you have it. Or if you think that Cy is probably not the best option for Koberger being an expert witness, tell me that. I mean, whatever you think in the comment section on our YouTube channel or anywhere else you're listening to this on a podcast, be sure to subscribe. And be sure, if you're not yet, check out that YouTube channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and press subscribe there. So in the early morning hours of November 13th, multiple surveillance cameras across different locations captured a white Hyundai Elantra moving along that very same Moscow-Pullman highway. The make and model are a match for the car Koberger drove. People will argue and say, well, they first said it was this year, but then it turned out to be that year. Yeah, they look pretty damn similar, and we're talking about security cameras. So they were right on the model and the make. Year was just slightly off. That's not a crazy difference in the vehicle they thought he was driving. We're also not talking about a single grainy frame anymore either. These were time-stamped clips showing a white vehicle consistent with Koberger's Elantra heading towards Moscow before the murders and then leaving the area shortly after. Of course, cars are not fingerprints, sure, but we're not in the realm of that could be anyone's sedan. Investigators tracked this vehicle on multiple cameras. They traced it circling the neighborhood, making passes by the victim's house, pausing, returning. This wasn't just a drive-by. This was repeated movements in the area where the murders happened within the time frame when they happened. That same make and model. That same pattern over and over. You can't deny that. One could say, well, it was another Hyundai Elantra. There's a lot of them on the road. And I'm sure that's what will be argued. Maybe it was. But then let's add some other pieces to the equation. Then you look at just one over here, just one over there, and you base your whole case on just one piece. You're not going to get a good understanding, or you're not going to make a good decision or good assumption on where you think this is going. You got to base it on the whole big picture, and that's what we're trying to do here. While that vehicle was caught on camera, Koberger's phone went silent. Yeah, that's a part not disputed. Between roughly 2:47 a.m. and 4:48 a.m., the precise window when the killings occurred, Koberger's phone was off the grid. No single, no signals, no pings, nothing. For just over 2 hours, the device went dark. We're not saying turning your phone off is a crime. People, of course, do it all the time. But when it lines up perfectly with a quadruple homicide that you're being accused of committing, you'd better have one hell of a reason. And I was out driving under the stars doesn't exactly explain why you needed to go dark for 121 minutes in the dead of night on a night that they had no stars. And when the phone does reappear, it's pinging near the same area where the murders took place just after 4:45 a.m. The phone reconnects to a cell tower in Moscow, right there, close to the crime scene, not in some distant hiking spot or some other highway way far away. Not halfway across the country. It's back where the crimes were taking place. It's a rough sequence for a defense that wants you to believe their client was nowhere near the murders, but that's not the only brick in this wall. There's also the DNA on the button strap of a leather knife sheath found under one of the victims. Investigators recovered a sample that of DNA that on that sheath believed to belong to the murder weapon. They were connected. The DNA on that sheath came back as a familial match to Brian Koberger. You may remember later a direct match was made from a trash piece that was pulled at his family's home in Pennsylvania. That sheath wasn't touched by a dozen people. It was handled by one, and the genetic link ties back to him. So it's not circumstantial. It is physical, it's specific, and it is a hard one to spin. So at this point, we've got a vehicle that looks like his, caught on camera near the crime scene, and we've got his phone going dark just before the murders and reconnecting right after, right back in the area. And we've got DNA on a murder-related object that points to him. And yet Cyray says the cell data clears him. Okay. Let's be really clear about what that means. Ray is not suggesting a minor discrepancy. He isn't saying, hey, I think the phone took a slightly different route. He's saying the entire prosecution timeline would be wrong according to his data. Again, it's not for him to prove all the other data. He's just saying the data that he has, that he is believing to be accurate, would contradict all of that. He's not there to argue the other points. He's just there to show his data. That's what he's hired for. That's what he does. The Koberger wasn't on the road. Their experts say he was on. That the phone never went east, that it never got close enough to matter. According to Ray, if the phone didn't take that route, then the car seen on the video couldn't have been his. And if that's not his car, then everything else starts to unravel. At least that's what the data would prove if it is factual. I'm saying he's personally saying that. I guess I'm saying if the data he has is reliable, then everything else certainly would have to be looked at. It's an interesting one. Certainly puts possibly some reasonable doubt into the mix. This is certainly the defense's strategy. Pull out one thread and hope the whole case unravels underneath it. Could it? Anything is possible. That strategy does only work if the thread you're pulling is stronger than the rest. In this case, it's one man's interpretation of a small slice of phone records going up against a mountain of corroborating data. Even the FBI's own experts, people who do this kind of analysis professionally, full-time, reviewed the same records and concluded that the movements matched the prosecution's timeline. The phone's pings, when charted, do show movement that aligns with the vehicle on camera. The phone being off during the murders, that doesn't refute the timeline. It strengthens the theory that someone was deliberately trying to avoid being tracked. And when the phone comes back online, its location does suggest a loop down towards the scene, then going away. In other words, the government's analysis builds a cohesive picture. Ray's interpretation builds a contradiction, one that asks the court to ignore multiple streams of independent evidence because one individual says the phone logs don't fit the route. Does that mean Ray is intentionally misrepresenting information? Not at all. He likely seriously believes his read on the data is more accurate. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. Expert witnesses challenge government data all the time. That is what they do. But what he's proposing, if his data is correct, would raise a lot of concerns. It asks for a complete substitution. Take all the existing evidence and toss it out the window. Replace it with this theory, which directly contradicts the video, timing, forensic evidence. Koberger buying the knife, Koberger buying the mask, and all the other weird, creepy stuff that we have mixed in here. Papa Rogers' picture that we, of course, can't confirm it's him, but certainly looked like Koberger in the picture, or artistic interpretation of him, and someone who is presenting information online, seemingly taunting everyone with facts that only the killer would know, and pushing back on anything that may point to him, like, oh, Hyundai Elantra, that's a red herring. So there's that. There's a lot of things that, if size data is correct, would contradict. Could that data be stronger than all of it? Yes, it very possibly could be. But is it? It's a bold move. And to be fair, bold moves sometimes work, especially in courtrooms. Jurors are human. They can be swayed by reasonable doubt. They can latch onto a single piece that strays from the rest of the story. And if presented well, it can make a big difference. It also means that the defense is walking a high wire here. No safety net. If Ray's testimony falters, if the judge limits it, or if the jury sees through it, or if it's not allowed in at all, well, that entire alibi takes a hit. And as of now, there's not much left to lean on. The truth is, Ray might be one of the few voices arguing this interpretation. But he's not just up against the prosecution. He's up against video cameras, DNA, digital trail gaps, and crime scenes that tell a story that you can't rewrite with cell tower coordinates. And that's where things start to feel like it might end up turning into a collision. Because, yes, Cy Ray wasn't always the individual poking holes in the state's case. For most of his career, he was the state's case, working side by side with law enforcement, helping prosecutors put people away, using different technology and data to do that. And again, nothing wrong with that. He's gone from one side to another. Again, nothing wrong with that. Expert witnesses can be called for prosecution, for defense. Just depends. But what does it all mean at the end of the day? What will his data tell us about the case against Koberger? He is a former law enforcement officer turned data consultant. He understands the case's digital evidence better than a lot of people. But he's basically claiming by presenting his side that he understands it better than the entire investigative team that was built.
the FBI's CAST team, surveillance analysis, forensic techs, even cell site engineers, all of them. If you're to believe the interpretation of data that's being presented by him, they all got it wrong, and he's the one who got it right. That's what you'd have to believe. I'm not telling you you have to believe one side or the other, but that is what you would have to believe. It's a tough pitch in any courtroom, but in a case like this where the pressure is sky high and the public scrutiny is constant and the facts are under a microscope, it's a big one. Because the moment Cy Ray takes a stand, if he does, his testimony will be measured against more than just his own words. It'll be stacked against the total weight of the state's case, and that's not a small hill to climb. That is Everest. The FBI Cellular Analysis Survey Team, CAST for short, is a specialized unit. Their job is to map out where cell phones have been using tower data, call records, and location analysis. There aren't tech hobbyists or contractors. They're full-time federal experts. And I'm not saying that Cy is a hobbyist. I believe he takes his work very seriously. In the Koberger case, the prosecution relied on CAST to build a timeline that shows Koberger's phone moving around Moscow the night of the murders. They used standard industry tools backed by years of precedent. And when they laid out their findings, it wasn't just some theory, it was a detailed documented report based on data collected directly from Koberger's provider. And that puts the data next to what their expert is saying, that those findings are severely flawed. He says the phone didn't go where CAST said it did. And that might sound like a solid defense angle until you remember, again, there's a history where a judge has raised concerns about the reliability of some of the methods that were used. Again, different case, may not be the same sort of analysis that's going on here, but it's a nick that you don't want a jury to necessarily hear about when you're trying to argue your case and have solid evidence on your side without any sort of blemishes. That's important. The prosecution's case isn't based on just that one kind of evidence, obviously. It's built like a bridge. We have met many, many records of surveillance footage, DNA, phone, car tracking, behavior patterns. Pulling, again, out one piece doesn't make it collapse. But that's what the defense is banking on. And reasonable doubt is a very powerful thing in a case like this. I'm sure Ray is acting in good faith. His role in this case isn't technical. It's to cast doubt. Go, hey, I think this information is not as accurate as mine. This happens all the time. But we're talking about the lives here of four young kids that were murdered. And you have a stack of evidence over here, including a different interpretation of the cell data. And you have over here just a piece, this one piece that says, well, that one piece up there is wrong. What about everything else up here? You know, sometimes you can get in there and pull the string out and the whole thing collapses. And sometimes you go over there to the Jenga. That's what I'm thinking of it as. The Jenga tower, and you pull one piece out and the whole case stands firm. So I guess we'll have to ask ourselves and find out, once this does make it to trial, if this theory makes it to trial, what kind of piece on the Jenga tower is this that's being pulled out? Is it one of those critical pieces that, you know, don't touch that one? Or comes right out, and the tower still stands. It's a bit of a wild card. One that the defense of Koberger may not have many other options to play. So you lay it down and you see what happens. What do you guys think? I've seen many comments saying, look into this. Look into this data. Look into this bombshell. So I have. And that's what I found. What have you found? And I don't mean like just a bunch of stray words. It's a lie. It's conspiracy. Bombshell. No, what contradicts us? It's a conversation. Because this guy is an expert witness, and I believe he can probably provide pretty decent testimony in a case. Just because one judge found his findings or his data in one to be inaccurate, that is one judge's finding. Like I said, another judge can interpret it completely differently. We have yet to see how this judge takes his data and his findings. And you have to stack all of it together. And even at the end of the day, his cell data is found to be more accurate than everything else. Is that enough to sway a jury? Is it enough to disprove the DNA and all the other pieces that are stacking up in this case? I don't know. When your life is on the line, I think you're going to take almost anything you got. And if that's the best card you have to play, then that might be the best card you have to play. Time will tell. Tell me what you think in the comments on YouTube. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're watching or listening to this. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, press subscribe there. We even have a premium option for you where you can get everything ad-free and in advance. So do check that out. If you're on YouTube, press subscribe, hit the bell. Let your friends know that we exist. Share the story. We appreciate the support. I look forward to hearing your response and your opinion on this part of the Brian Koberger case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for watching.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. He was charming, handsome, a devoted husband, a doting father. When his wife died tragically in a freak accident, everyone pitied him. He played the role so well, grieving widower, devastated, single dad, just trying to put the pieces back together. But the thing about perfect men, they're usually hiding something. And this one was hiding everything. The affair, the insurance policy, the other wife in another state who had no idea she was married to a walking crime scene. If she had only subscribed to True Crime Today, Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, she could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, she could have seen through the lies. She could have gotten out while she still had the chance. Instead, she's just another case we'll be covering next week. Don't be her. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year.
Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, A LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first.